We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Super Regional field is set, and what a thrilling start to the NCAA tournament. We had to set us up for the 16 remaining teams in 8 best of 3 Super Regional series beginning this Friday and Saturday across the country. From epic comebacks and filthy walk-offs to insane individual performances and head-scratching no-shows. Yeah, I'm looking at you, Florida. We'll have plenty of the usual suspects, but even so, there's room for a new dance partner in South Florida who's just under 500 a couple of weeks ago. Kyle Schassberger and Michael Cerber with you. I'm on Twitter at Kyle Schass. He's at L_Cerberino. We'll handicap the regional weekend that was. Look ahead to the Supers this weekend. Our biggest takeaways and an update on the head coaching situation at Texas A&M. Jim Schlossnagel, LSU. And now we even have 2 more massive openings on the West Coast that combined for 40 College World Series appearances and 9 national titles. Serbs, I come to you from a land far, far away in the south suburbs of Chicago today. I'll be taking my daughter into the city. We'll have those typical, you know, postcard photo ops, go see the Bean, Chicago River, walk up Michigan Avenue, maybe go to the Water Tower place, you know, visit the big mall and check things out, lakeside right next to Lake Michigan. How are things back for you in NC?
It's kind of gray. You're from here. You know, we haven't had a ton of rain this year. So we're looking at that today, which is going to get in the way of me doing any type of yard work, which kind of pisses me off. But hey, has your daughter been to Chicago? So you're from Chicago. I don't know if our listeners know that. I think they might. But has your daughter been before, or is this like her first trip to Chicago with you?
So this is the first one that she could kind of understand and remember in any capacity. She had to have been maybe 1.5 the last time we were here, you know, maybe even before that. And It was cold, you know, it was either Thanksgiving or Christmas. So it's a different world. It's a different universe when you come to the Windy City during the winter months. And that's what everybody kind of wants to go to and lean into when they talk about Chicago. Oh, I don't want to live there. You know, it's too cold and the winters and the snow. Well, listen, reality check, baby. Best summer city in the world is Chicago. Dude, it's been 80s and 90s. Dude, it's a different kind of humidity up here, man. Like, I'm sitting in my buddy's backyard yesterday, Tuesday, and we're, you know, catching up, watching the kids play. You know, my daughter, who's 5, going on 6, she's hitting off of a tee. I'm throwing some live wiffle ball action to her. We had dueling tees.
Oh,
like,
boy.
My best friend's son, who's 4, is hitting off one tee as a right-hander, and then my daughter, who's 5, is lefty, and she's hitting off another tee, and they're side by side. Like, we had like an Emanski like training video infomercial going yesterday in his backyard. Like, it was incredible. But like, I'm soaking dripping sweat through my shirt. I had to stop drinking. Like, I couldn't even drink anymore. And you know, I might have went to the bathroom like twice all day yesterday because that humidity gets to you in a weird way where you just don't have to go. Like, you are absorbing all of your liquids as best you can to just survive. So it has been hot. The rain, though, so I schedule my trip around a golf tournament every year or a golf outing with 16 guys out in Indiana, and it's a stay and play. It's a 2-night thing. We play almost 100 holes of golf. So we got rained out Monday. So that's the bummer. I drive 10 and a half hours, you know, to schedule this around one weekend, and then we don't even get to play the amount of golf we were supposed to on Monday. So that was a bit of a bummer. I'm still suffering from my food coma from Aurelio's Pizza, my tavern-style square-cut thin crust pizza. I had almost an entire fiesta style, which is an extra large, yesterday, and you know, that's really just starting to, you know, show itself through the pores of my body, and I'm hurting. Did the Italian beef, did the hot dog on Monday night, and we'll go downtown today, and I'll probably do deep dish today for sure.
Oh,
so you know, it just doesn't stop, man. It keeps going.
Well, I'll nominate you for Rad Dad for your baseball coaching, your wiffle ball coaching that you were doing, but also for showing your daughter around your hometown. I know that's probably exciting for you to kind of introduce her to some stuff that was just, you know, a big deal for you when you were a kid, and you kind of get to share that with her. That's a beautiful thing. I don't want to get too adorable to start the show, but that's nice. And you know, I'll back you up. I've never been to Chicago, but just on in general. You know, people get the wrong idea about, like, Chicago and New York. It's always so cold. It's like, yeah, in the winter it's cold. But, like, those places are kind of built around these water, you know? And what water does is it creates this atmosphere and, like, humidity. And all. Because I'm from Columbia, South Carolina, which is just plopped down in the middle of a swamp, similar to that of Chicago and New York. And, like, you don't realize, like, if you're not from an area that's like that, that just has a ton of water around, you don't get the humidity thing. So I understand where you're coming from, because I know there's, what's the river that runs, is it the Chicago River?
Yeah, Chicago River. That's the one that dyed green for St. Paddy's Day and everything.
Yeah, and is that the only water that's running around Chicago? I mean, it's a big river, though, even if it is the only one, but, like, you know,
yeah,
that's...
But it flows into the lake. You got Lake Michigan right there. So like, there you got a beach.
Yeah. So like water, that's creating a whole greenhouse effect. Like, man, summers in cities, people do not understand. Like also like concrete blasting off, like mirrored windows on these skyscrapers. Like cities are freaking hot in the summertime. So props to you for going to the concrete jungle and enduring all that. But did you get to watch some college baseball while you were up there?
Dude, I watched quite a bit. Like, I'm surprised as much as I was able to take in, because I was a little upset with the timing of this trip, knowing that it was the start of regional weekend. But look, I had 10 and a half hours in the car on Friday night into Saturday morning. So I listened. I mean, I was doing like whip around DJ type action on the TuneIn radio app, which, you know, we have our college sports channel, which some of our listeners might be familiar with, the SEC Radio Network. You can, you know, access that through there. But all of our partner schools, too, with Learfield IMG College, you can access real live play-by-play programming for all of these teams while you're on the road. So just search Arkansas, just search Vanderbilt, you know, whatever it may be, Tennessee. You know, I had a grand slam walk-off that I heard in real time on Friday night, and it's just amazing and chilling, the goosebumps, and you're trying to keep tabs on everything going on, and it's just unlimited, you know, nationwide coverage of everything going on, and then it spills into Saturday. Saturday, you know, my golf trip begins. I'm keeping tabs, checking Twitter, doing everything I can, get to the hotel, the resort Saturday night. What do we have on? Nebraska and Arkansas on the television, Texas Tech, and I think it was North Carolina that night on Saturday evening. So Sunday, same deal. Monday, we had games. We even had a game on Tuesday because of a rainout. So, like, dude, college baseball, having regional weekend back, I don't know what it was like for you, but, you know, it's similar to March Madness. Like, you don't know what you have until it's gone, and it just increases and magnifies, you know, or amplifies the excitement and just how much you love this time of the year and just how insane. Like, dude, you forget how overwhelming it is with the amount of games going on. Like, we need... You know, squeeze play is great on ESPN. You know, the old bases loaded that they've now rebranded. But, like, dude, I don't even know if that's enough to keep up with everything going on at one time. I mean, it was an incredible jam-packed weekend.
Yeah, it's a bit daunting. I think it gives the rest of the country a taste of what, you know, SEC fans maybe get to experience throughout the year. Week in, week out, SEC play is pretty intense. And, you know, you bounce around to a lot of games going on at once. I don't know that, like, that's the only thing that I could think of that even comes close to regional weekend and conference tournament week. As far as the intensity level, it's just, you know, it gives everyone else kind of a chance to observe what, you know, the SEC network and the mothership kind of provides for them throughout the season. And it's also further evidence that college baseball is an extremely exciting sport to watch. We had a lot of great games, a lot of runs scored. I know we'll get to Notre Dame shortly. They blew up over the weekend. So, I mean, yeah, I love it, and I'm looking forward to Supers coming up. We got some good matchups and a couple that we didn't expect. And honestly, we almost saw the number one seed Razorbacks like totally eat it on Monday, but they pulled it out.
Yeah, and what do we get? What we come to expect with the Hogs? Timely clutch home runs, and then also an incredible stopper in Kevin Copps. I mean, the dude threw seven innings. More on him in a moment. Let's run down at least all of the matchups, and then we'll start to unpack what we saw this past weekend as we look ahead. But the Super Regionals, the left side of the bracket, one side, if you will, that will represent Omaha. These eight teams will decide the first four spots, these four series. NC State at number one, Arkansas, so it's the Fayetteville Super Regional. These games are beginning on Friday. East Carolina, the 13 overall national seed, taking on four-seeded Vanderbilt, beginning at noon on Friday. That's a 6 o'clock Eastern start for NC State and Arkansas, by the way. But that's the Nashville Super Regional. The Lubbock Super Regional starting at 3 o'clock on Friday. Stanford, the 9, taking on 8-seeded Texas Tech, who swept through their regional in Lubbock. Not a lot of suspense there. 12-seeded Ole Miss, taken to the 7th game with Southern Miss on Monday, taking on 5-seeded Arizona. 9 o'clock start Eastern time for that final Super Regional on the left side of the bracket to begin on Friday. And then Saturday, South Florida and 2-seeded Texas. 9 o'clock start on Saturday night. Dallas Baptist and Virginia. Here's your neutral site regional being awarded to Columbia. That's going to start at noon on Saturday. LSU and 3-seeded Tennessee, your all-SEC showdown, 7 o'clock start on Saturday night, and then 10-seeded Notre Dame and 7-seeded Mississippi State, 2 o'clock start on Saturday. So those are the matchups. Those are the 16 teams. As we frame that weekend, let's unpack, though, what we just had. So a lot of runs were scored, Server. You touched on that, particularly Saturday. The winning teams outscored the losers 313-102. I'm sitting there in my resort before going out to play 36 holes, and I'm trying to tabulate all 32 games and all the run totals for the winners and the losers. And I'm like, I got to get this on Twitter. I got to see this. This is just insane, the amount of scoring that we had on Saturday. And in the center of this explosive weekend was Ole Miss's Tim Elko and his growing legend that will be discussed in circles will far exceed the Grove for ages.
It's up his 55th RBI, too. Swung on, Elko, high fly ball, left center field. Trimble is at the wall, and it is out of here! Grand slam, Elko, his third of the year, his second of the Oxford Regional.
That's courtesy of the Ole Miss Sports Network, David Kellum, DK, love the dude. Tim Elko, one of two grand slams on the weekend. He hit a granny on Friday, hit a granny Monday to make it 9-0 over Southern Miss. Now, the Golden Eagles had a valiant comeback effort, falling ultimately 12-9 only. But here, Serbs, this guy tore his ACL, like, April 5th. Since he's come back, he's had two multi-homer games. He's hitting .302, seven home runs in all, 18 RBIs. He had two homers in that game Monday against Southern Miss. I mean, this dude is beyond legendary. I don't know if there are enough adjectives to describe him and his impact at Ole Miss, but, like, it is insane what he's been able to do on just one ACL. Like, it's incredible.
Yeah, it makes me think of a performance by Deshaun Watson late in his freshman season. He tore his ACL, and he went out and played against South Carolina and beat them. But then he didn't go to the bowl game. Elko has torn his ACL, and he's like, and now we're going to go try and win this whole damn thing. And the big fella is writing himself into legend status at Ole Miss for playing through this injury. You know, has he had surgery, or is he just toughing it out? I think he's toughing it out no matter, even if he's had surgery or not. But is he just saying, like, you know what, don't need an ACL? Or has he had surgery and he's like, the rehab process is just hitting bombs?
He is, now I don't know the particulars of it. I don't believe he's had surgery at this point. Like you said, okay. He's just grinding it out, but, like, okay. He's proving that he has a future at the next level, I think, as what you would call a professional hitter. Like, you know, people forget, like, there are only so many Major League Baseball teams, right? And think about the farm system and how, you know, at times it might seem oversaturated. And a lot of these guys that become legends for their respective teams in college never see the light of day in the big leagues and never maybe get a fair shake either. You look at the foreign influence of players and where baseball pools all their talent from, you know, it's hard to make it in baseball, maybe more so than any other sport, just because of the influence outside of America. So, like, Elko, though, if he continues to hit like this, and this is his final year, you know, he's going to get a shake. He's going to get a look somewhere. He's going to have an opportunity in the minors, you know, to hit, to be somebody who can, you know, contribute. And I think that's one of the joys here. And even if he doesn't get a chance at the next level, like, Tim Elko is a name that is going to go down, you know, forever in Ole Miss baseball lore, you know, as just this larger-than-life kind of fictional-like character, and you're just not going to believe what he was able to do and what he was able to contribute. So Ole Miss has earned now a date with Arizona, and there are going to be a lot of runs scored in Tucson this weekend. Two of the most high-powered offenses, Ole Miss, the number one offense in the SEC all year, Arizona right there near the top, if not at the very top in the Pac-12. Having no problems in the Tucson regional over the weekend, and Doug Nikhazy, I'm incredibly interested on what this guy can do. He came in, he started again on Monday, and fared well for himself. Derek Diamond, who started in Friday's win over Southeast Missouri, came in relief on Monday. I mean, Ole Miss's pitching staff is taxed, so I'm going to be very interested to see how they could rebound against Arizona in the Supers this weekend. But we know they're going to be able to hit, and can the offense, you know, offset any inefficiencies, you know, from that pitching staff of Ole Miss this weekend against Arizona? I don't know, but it's hard to doubt what Doug Nikhazy can do, picking up his 11th win of the year. And Taylor Broadway getting his 16th save. He's got more than anybody else in Ole Miss history, if I recall correctly. So this Ole Miss team is a lot of fun, man. We had fun with them last year, Serbs, if you remember, early on in the season before COVID. And it's a different kind of team, though, this year. And Mike Bianco, you know, may he flirt with the LSU job? I mean, his son Drew plays for LSU. Mm. Bianco is a former LSU Tiger. Like, you wonder if that can maybe seep in and present a distraction. Not to this point, but things are going to get hot and heavy. And speaking of LSU, you know, Paul Maneri sticking around another weekend. I mean, there is some drama in the SEC coaching circles for sure. And you hope that doesn't impact Ole Miss as they continue to try and push forward. Any other thoughts on Ole Miss or the Oxford Regional at all? Southern Miss is going to get everybody back offensively next year. Scott Barry has done a tremendous job. You know, that goes without saying in his time in Hattiesburg, and he's going to have a stacked, I think Gabe Montenegro had 16, 17 hits the entire weekend in that regional. So the entire offense is going to be back. In Conference USA, despite Louisiana Tech losing, Southern Miss losing, Old Dominion losing, Charlotte losing, like, they had four teams, right? And almost all of them could have hosted. None of them advanced to the Supers, but, you know, maybe a moment of silence, round of applause at the same time for what CUSA was able to achieve this year.
Yeah, props to CUSA. I'm fortunate that they're not going to be playing in a super regional because it's always nice to root for those smaller schools, but we have some other options left in the field. I was honestly, yeah, surprised that none of them made it because we did talk about them this year. They were really impressive down the stretch. I was probably thinking Charlotte had the best shot of any of them, but I don't know what the situation looks like for the rest of those teams, but Southern Miss has been firmly entrenched as, you know, a regional mainstay in college baseball for the past few years here. So, yeah, if they're getting everybody back, like, look out. They're poised for a run next season in what will be a much more normal season too. Let's also keep in mind, for all these clubs whose season ended last week, it was a great achievement to even get to the regionals, given the circumstances of how this season came to be, everything that was, you know, faced as it went on with COVID and games getting moved around and stuff, they dealt with it just as much as football and basketball did when the pandemic was raging, even a little bit more than it has been throughout baseball season. But you know, Ole Miss is going to be interesting to watch as it goes along. Looking forward to the Arizona series. I love the idea of just an SEC team having to go out to the desert And, you know, Arizona's going to have a chip on their shoulder, right? I think anybody that plays an SEC team is going to come into that game with a chip on their shoulder, because the national conversation is going to be built around, well, you know, it's always built around the SEC is the best. It just means more. And that's going to give some motivation to Zona for sure.
So let's keep it in the SEC, which makes sense because, look, six teams are represented in the Super Regional. Only two teams did not advance, that being Florida, who got bounced after a 19-1 trouncing by South Alabama in their own regional. Yeah, that's a forgettable performance. It's safe to say the Gators were not ready to play. Motivation may be a factor. And Kevin O'Sullivan, is he a guy who could be flirting with another job? Hint, tease. Of what's to come. But Florida's gone, South Carolina's gone, Virginia had eliminated them before taking the Old Dominion regional in walk-off fashion on Tuesday. But I want to pivot to a team that you mentioned, Serber, and that is the number one overall seed in Arkansas, who was pushed to the brink of elimination over the weekend in the Fayetteville regional. They knocked off New Jersey Institute of Technology, and it was not easy on Friday, 13-8. They trailed in that ball game early on. Kevin Copps had to come in the fourth inning. In the fourth inning to stop the bleeding. That was one of the games that I had tuned in as I was driving cross-country up to Chi-Town. They were able to come back. They'll get the 13-8 win. NJIT, by the way, asserted themselves nicely over the weekend. The Institute of Technology, from what I understand, they became fan favorites of the crazed Hog fans in Fayetteville. Actually, you know, went to a local restaurant, local eatery, and got a standing ovation from, like, all of the Arkansas people in there. So it was like really cool when you see those small schools, you know, come in and hold their own well and then get recognized for it, because this is an experience they'll never forget. So super awesome. But then Nebraska, Arkansas won 5-1 in the first meeting on Saturday. And then Sunday, Nebraska won 5-3, setting up a game seven winner take all, which Arkansas was able to win. But they were down 2-0.
Yeah.
Serbs, when Kevin Copps came in and he threw the next seven innings, add some timely home runs, a pinch hit homer by Charlie Welch to put things completely out of reach in the late innings. Robert Moore had another timely bomb to tie things up in that contest. So your SEC Pitcher of the Year, Collegiate Baseball National Player of the Year, Kevin Copps, this is what he did over the Fayetteville Regional weekend. 13 1/3 scoreless innings in relief, two wins and a save. He struck out 15 and did not walk a single person. Not to mention seven innings on Monday.
Video game numbers. He's like a video game player. Like, that doesn't happen. Seven, and it's like you say, oh, he had seven innings of relief, but he does that all the time.
All the time, yeah.
Like he is always coming in and pitching like four or five, six, seven innings, and it's like, he's the best starter you have that doesn't start. It's amazing.
So he's 12-0, and that's the second most wins in the country. He's not a starter.
Has he started any games?
No, and that's the most of any pitcher across the nation who has not taken a loss. So he's 12-0. He's got 11 saves. Okay.
We're getting ahead of ourselves here, but let me just present a scenario to you. What do you do with a guy like that if you're in Omaha and, you know, it's a three-game series to win the national championship? Say you're tied 1-1 and he didn't pitch game two, you know? I think you roll him out there and start him game three.
Or do you not?
Do you just, like, put out somebody that you're like, I know I can get two or three good innings from this guy, and then we'll turn it over to Kevin?
Well, here's the thing, too. You get a day in between games. Like, you're not playing back-to-backs in Omaha at all. So, yeah. Like, we've seen the workload that Kevin Copps is able to take on. I mean, why think that you might have to do it any differently than what you've already done to get to this point? You know, like, you've got guys like Patrick Wicklander, you know, who can come in and give you a strong start. You've got other guys like Lale Lockhart or Caleb Bolden, Peyton Pallette. You know, you've got trusted starters, which Arkansas, I say trusted, it's been a little skeptic at times, which is why Copps has had to been used the way that he has. He's had those opportunities. But, you know, Kevin Copps, here's his total line, okay? No game started, by the way, just had to confirm. 31 appearances. That is That is six more appearances than Caden Monk on the year, who has come in relief. But 31 appearances, 12-0 record. He's got 11 saves, 79 and two-thirds innings pitched, 43 hits, 6 runs allowed in 79 and two-thirds. Only 6 runs allowed, all of them earned, 120 strikeouts in those 79 and two-thirds to 15 walks. Opponents are hitting 156 off of him. He's allowed 3 homers, 4 doubles, and his ERA, here's the topper. His ERA is .68 in 79 and two-thirds innings. It's so low, you could double that .68, okay, to make it, what, .1.34, I guess it would be if you double it. It still would be only .06 away from being the best in the country. That's if you double it. I mean, 13.9 batters per 9 innings that he's striking out, 7.47 via strikeout for every walk. I mean, that ratio is just ungodly. You can't say enough about we talk about Tim Elko and just how head-scratching, how bizarre, how, you know, you can't believe you're witnessing the sort of things you are with a guy on one ACL. And then you look, you know, in the same division, if you will, in the SEC, and you've got a guy on the mound in Kevin Copps. I mean, these are just, you know, larger-than-life performances and individuals, and it's hard to believe what we're witnessing this year from a couple of these guys individually, and particularly in Kevin Copps.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even that guys can't hit him. It's that they can't even get on base, you know? Like, it's a thrill. Like, when you look at this, I'm looking at this line, and I just can't believe it's, like, a real thing that's happening. Because it reminds me of like something you put up in a video game. Like the 8-1 strikeout to walk ratio it's insane. He's gonna make a lot of money in his life. I hope he's not like. I mean, if I'm an MLB team, I'm looking at this guy and I'm like, well, he's ready to go now.
Yeah,
you know,
let's go.
He's throwing 31. He's had 31 appearances. Most of them are coming on little to no rest. It's like. He's doing what you do as a big league pitcher, yeah. And I mean, doing it in the SEC as a whole other thing. Yeah, I think you're right on the thing I propose. You know, maybe you just stick with what's worked so far. But we're probably going to see him pitch just about every game out there. You know, and they will. Someone's gonna have to light him up, right?
Yeah.
To knock these hogs out, you're either just going to have to put up a big spot in an elimination game early before they get a chance to run him out there, or you're actually going to go after have to take him, which no one has done. So, you know, he just makes Arkansas just such a difficult out for everybody that's going to face him throughout the rest of this tournament.
You're going to have to beat Kevin Copps if you're going to take down top-seeded Arkansas.
100%.
There's no doubt about it. And even when you get behind, you know, in a game or you're ahead taking on Arkansas, like Copps is going to come in. He's going to stop the bleeding. It's automatic. And he's going to shut you down. And then those Arkansas bats are going to come alive late in the game. You know, whether it's Christian Franklin, Jalen Battles, you know, Bob Moore. I mean, they've got guys. They've got dudes everywhere. And they're all coming up with timely hitting.
I tuned into that game. I didn't watch the beginning of that game. It was 2-2, I think, in the seventh when I put it on. And I just, as soon as I saw he was on the mound, I was like, they're fine. You know?
Yep.
Like, when I put the game on because I see, I'm like, holy crap. Like, Nebraska might do this. And then as soon as I turn it on, I see who's throwing, and I'm like, it's over. And it's just crazy to just have that luxury coming out of the pen like that. So, yeah, Hogs, it's going to be tough all the way. You hit it on the head. You got to go through him.
You put it the best way, too. I mean, video game numbers, that's for sure. You talk about video games, you talk about fairy tale stories, endings, possibly. It isn't the end yet for the fairy tale finish that LSU is looking for Paul Maneri. Despite losing game one to Gonzaga 3-0, they're going to find themselves in the Knoxville Super Regional taking on Tennessee in an all-SEC showdown. They fell to Gonzaga, then beat Central Connecticut State, took extra innings in the loser bracket from the Eugene Regional over the weekend, 6-5. They come back and win. Beat Gonzaga in the revenge game, 9-4. take down the host Oregon 4-1, and then in a thrilling back and forth, just bonker showdown late on Monday night. Serbs, we had two regional finals starting at 10 o'clock on a Monday night on the East Coast. You had Oregon and LSU, and then you had Stanford and UC Irvine. Anteaters are bounced. Stanford's back in the super regional round. But, like, dude, two at 10 o'clock? Like, we couldn't do something to start those games on the West Coast? Like, you know, at 5 o'clock local time? You know, 8 o'clock Eastern? Like, what's going on, man? That's a little too late for a Monday night.
Yeah, well, you know, college baseball getting, you know, the college baseball shaft like they always do, unfortunately. But I'd rather have them at 10 o'clock than, like, trying to search for them on, like, some European streaming site or something like that, you know, because you don't have Pac-12 network or something dumb. But, yeah, I mean, it's late. It's going to be Ole Miss, Arizona. It's going to be late, 9 o'clock Eastern. Even though that's a Friday night, I know it's still 9 o'clock Eastern's late for some of us.
It's just, well, you know, the Monday night, like, late 9 o'clock Central thing, 10 o'clock Eastern time, like, that stuff's reserved for national championships, which is a whole nother argument and story, you know, with how late those games start. But, like, come on. So, I'm watching LSU, Oregon. I'm laying down. I've had a long week. It's been a long few days at the beginning of my trip. So, I pass out in, like, the second inning. It's, like, 9:30 Central time where I'm at watching. And then I wake back up just for the final out, like around midnight, I think it was, Central time for Palmetto and LSU. So the swan song continues, and they're going to face a Tennessee team that it produced, I think, the most dramatic of finishes, not counting Virginia's super clinching walk-off win on Tuesday off the bat of Devin Ortiz. But this from Tennessee over the weekend, the best finish by far.
Steenstra at third, Ferguson now at second, Rucker the tying run at first, one out, bottom of the ninth, Wright State 8, Tennessee 5. Ball hit high in the air into right field, going back is Sayre, and Tennessee can say hello win column. A grand slam in the bottom of the ninth. You can't draw it up any better. Home run number 7, grand slam number 2. And Drew Gilbert and the Big Orange will top this ball game against Wright State and walk it off against the Raiders. Holy smokes! He'll touch home plate, and Tennessee stays alive by the slightest hair of its chinny chin chin. Final score, Tennessee 9. Wright State 8.
Courtesy of the Vol Radio Network. That's something my grandmother would say. The hair of your chinny chin chin reminds me of the three little piggies, right? Wasn't that the little nursery rhyme?
Yeah, three little pigs. Did you ever have the three little javelinas when you were a kid? Did you have that book?
I never heard of that one. Enlighten me.
It was like it was the three little pigs, but it had like a Tex-Mex inspiration to it. I think that's maybe on more of I think it's strictly our generation that got that, like 90s kids. I don't think it was like anything that our parents would have known about. And I don't know who like hipped my parents to it, because it certainly wasn't anything they had ever read. But it was like my favorite thing when I was a kid, because I knew the three little pigs, but the three little javelinas it was just a little bit different. And it was such a cool illustration book. But sorry, I derailed us briefly. Back to baseball.
No, I mean, look, I'm going to have to get the three little javelinas for my daughter. I'm going to have to find that. So shoot me a link. Tell me where I can find that one. Drew Gilbert with the walk-off, 9-8, the final score for Tennessee over Wright State in game one of the Knoxville Regional, and set the tone for Tennessee throughout the rest of the weekend. They come out of the Knoxville Regional. But listening to that one, I think I was driving through Ohio at that point, Serbs, on Friday night. And, man, like, you can hear through that call just – the magnitude, the moment, just how unlikely that was. I mean, the position Wright State was in, they had that game at hand. They went to the bullpen, made a change. The reliever, you know, walked the first guy, loads the bases, and then Drew Gilbert walks up, and he cuts through. He swings through a changeup. He was guessing fastball in the first pitch, and he took a home run swing, and then he gets the fastball in the second delivery and deposits it over the wall. Just an incredible finish. Just chilling, the goosebumps. I mean, how can you not be romantic about baseball, right? Like, I give that call a 10 out of 10. That was awesome.
Yeah, phenomenal call. Tennessee always brings the gas, no matter what the sport may be. We've had some pretty awesome calls on the football field too from them recently, but yeah, Tennessee. Who I can't believe they're here. I can't believe, like, it's every week we talk about like where this program has come from over the past several years, which is just being an afterthought within the SEC, to really having one of the most memorable moments of the weekend. Pretty cool.
Yeah, so cool. And now you're going to get a rematch from earlier this year when Tennessee swept LSU. So like Florida State, you know, 2 years ago, LSU is trying to do for Paul Menieri what Florida State did for Mike Martin.
Yep.
And that was send him off in with a College World Series appearance. And Florida State went to Baton Rouge that year and took both games from LSU. Didn't even need a third game. Won convincingly and quickly over the Tigers on their own home turf to send Florida State to a College World Series in Mike Martin's final season. So let's see if LSU can do the same for Paul Menieri. He's taken them there a number of times already, runner-up in 17, winner in 09, and Paul Menieri, who will be leaving after this year, announcing that, you know, after their exit from Hoover, you know, providing a little bit of extra layer of motivation for his team and for his guys. Let's shift things over to Starkville, keeping it in the SEC. And Starkville, Duty Noble Field, 15,000 people are going to welcome the Golden Domers, Notre Dame, to Stark Vegas this weekend. I cannot wait to see the shine of those helmets just penetrate that Duty Noble skyline, that stadium, and for Notre Dame to come in and just absolutely... Sorry, this is the homer in me for Notre Dame for sure, but I can't wait to see the Irish just wax on the Bulldogs for sure. I think Mississippi State fans already are talking a big game and trying to generate some sort of, you know, verbal warfare with Notre Dame people. But look, Notre Dame is not having it, man. They're pissed. Link Jarrett said as much, that they were left out of the top eight national seed field. And now because of it, which is total crap, despite sweeping through their field 50-5, okay, and hitting 15 home runs across a two-game stretch against Central Michigan and UConn, which, by the way, they beat the Huskies, who started their ace on Saturday, 26-3 football finish there in South Bend. Now their prize is they have to go down to Duty Noble.
Notre Dame football doesn't score 26 points.
You're right.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, couldn't help myself. You were getting a little too high on the Golden Domers. Continue.
Nico Cavadas showed out in a big way too, just hitting the ball over the park. And I am most intrigued. This will be my favorite super. I think we mentioned on the show last week, if things lined up correctly, Notre Dame going to Mississippi State. We're going to get it. Bulldogs and Irish this weekend. But again, it's not fair, you know, Serbs. It really isn't. But you can only control what you can control. So, like, I can get upset about it to an extent. I think it sucks. That Notre Dame's not going to host a Super Regional, but, like, still, this is going to provide us, I think, one of the more aesthetically pleasing and fun environments, and I think Notre Dame is going to thrive. I can't wait to see how they react in this sort of environment. It's going to be fun this weekend.
So, to piggyback on your homerness, I'm a Clemson homer. Like, let's not kid ourselves. And if there's anything being a Clemson homer has taught me, it's that Dabo can, like, take anything negative or even, like, moderate and turn it into an advantage for his football team. And that's not unique to him. That's just a coaching thing. But he just happens to wear everything on his sleeve so everyone sees it all the time and gets annoyed by it. Don't kid yourself. Like, Notre Dame is highly motivated because they're not a top eight national seed. And while it may be BS that they have to go down to Starkville, even though they should probably be hosting a super regional, that's not going to – they're not going to step into that stadium, see that environment, and crumple, you know? They're going to thrive on that. And that's going to be an interesting series to watch. I'm putting that as the Gold Star series for the weekend. I want – yeah, I'm going to go ahead and say that. LSU-Tennessee is going to be very good. South Florida-Texas. I think, like, I'm interested to see if South Florida can continue this – run that they're on to make it to Omaha, but that's the one. Notre Dame, Mississippi State, directly into my veins.
And we'll pick all eight of these series in a moment. And you mentioned South Florida. They're the one team, the new dance partner, if you will, is making their first ever Super Regional appearance. A team that was, you know, for dead just a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about the American Athletic Conference, the AAC, just being an ECU one bid league. And then all of a sudden, ECU has to come out of the loser's bracket. USF is able to beat them and earn a way to the title game. They get the automatic bid. And then here they are in the Gainesville Regional. And while Florida, you know, craps all over themselves, South Florida is a beneficiary of that. And they give us a great final game against South Alabama. One of the dudes for South Alabama, the left fielder, jumped the wall and had a phenomenal home run saving catch at one point against the Bulls when it was in the late stages of that game. I mean, a tremendous theater between those two, but South Florida is able to pull it out. Awesome celebration too when they clinch and they're all running out of the dugout. Like, very, very cool vibes from this Bulls ball club who's playing with house money, and now they get to go to Texas to the Austin Super Regional. Texas, no problems in Austin for regional weekend, and we're going to have the Longhorns against the Bulls. So, like, Cerber, my question to you is a Longhorn a Bull and vice versa? And, you know, what kind of, like, voodoo, like, cross-pollination do we have here between mascots?
All right. So I did some light research. A Longhorn can be either a cow or a bull. It doesn't necessarily have to be a male cattle, if you will. It's just a specific breed of cattle noted for those horns. So a Longhorn is not just a bull. So no, a Longhorn isn't a bull, but a Longhorn can be a bull. But a bull is not necessarily a Longhorn.
Finkel is Einhorn. Finkel is Einhorn. Finkel is
Einhorn. Einhorn is Finkel. Einhorn is a man.
Dude, okay. Grab the plunger, bro, and put it up to your face. That's the only. That was the visual I had when I was thinking about South Florida and Texas. I'm like, wait, Longhorn, bull. Bull, Longhorn. Finkel is Einhorn. Yeah. Einhorn is Finkel. Oh, Ace Ventura, man. What a classic. So, like, my head is just spinning over the mascots and just trying to figure out, you know, what is what and what breed of animal can be another breed. And it takes me back to grade school and the joy of school really in general and an education that once you remove yourself from elementary and junior high, you forget most everything you've learned because you don't apply it in your everyday life. So, you know, that's one of the negatives of our educational system. But no, that'll be a lot of fun, man. I think USF, this is kind of like the NJIT argument. While they asserted themselves well and played well and represented themselves in Fayetteville, you know, they didn't come out on the winning end by any means. South Florida's in a similar position. Like, what do they have to lose? You know, and they can do a lot for their program, for the growth of their program, for the exposure from a recruiting standpoint. I mean, they're in Florida, and we know the Gators own Florida, and then you have Florida State also, and Miami. You've got three powerhouse baseball schools there in South Florida. You know, being an AAC team, you know, they want a piece of that pie, too, in terms of, you know, trying to change the trajectory of their program and how they're viewed, how they're perceived in that state and even across the AAC, which is desperate of somebody else stepping up and joining ECU because Wichita State is way down. Houston is way down. You know, Tulane has been there, but they haven't been able to break through that wall. So this if we're going to pick. And maybe we can do this right now, Serbs. You know, looking at all the matchups this weekend, I mean, who is your underdog that might be – and it's either Dallas Baptist or South Florida, you know, right? And from an underdog standpoint. So, like, who do you think has the better chance?
I would say Dallas Baptist just because we did see Virginia have to go all the way to the end of that regional. I hesitate to call East Carolina an underdog, but in Nashville, taking on that rotation, which I know didn't light it up necessarily last week, East Carolina, while Dallas Baptist might be the underdog, that the small school, the no one's ever heard of, best chance to win, I don't think South Florida has a chance to even take Texas to a third game. Like, I want them to, and it'd be interesting to see what happens, but I don't even think that'll happen. I think Dallas Baptist, Virginia's got a chance to go to three games, but, like, East Carolina, I'm counting as an underdog because they can't get past this point. And now
they never have.
They can't get past here. And to do it now, they have to beat what, you know, all season long, you know, up until Arkansas kind of separated themselves a little bit. We'd said, and really for the past 3 or 4 years, we've said it's the best team in college baseball consistently. And so while East Carolina is an established power in college baseball over the past 5 to 10 years now, to get over this hump that they can't get over, they have to get past literally the best college baseball program of the past 5 to 10 years. So overall in the country. I know that wasn't necessarily the question you asked, but I have a hard time not classifying East Carolina as an underdog because of all those factors.
That's fair. And that was an oversight. I think you're correct in viewing ECU as one of potentially three massive underdogs, in singling them out with DBU as well as USF. Not quite maybe on the same tier as Dallas Baptist and USF, but because ECU has so desperately been trying to get to this point and clinch their first ever berth in the College World Series, the fact that they drew Vanderbilt, and we knew this when the seedings came out a week ago, that ECU would match up with Vandy, Greenville, and Nashville regionals, it's a tough draw. And I don't think ECU is going to be able to handle Vanderbilt. But then again, you know, stranger things have happened. So the thing about DBU, Serbs, and just to close up shop on USF, I don't think they're going to show up in Austin with a slipper on at all. I think they're going to get undressed, if not, you know, already by the Longhorns. So DBU, this is a fascinating regional because the neutral site super regional is something that you don't see. Apparently, this used to be a thing. I don't quite remember it, but a neutral super regional, Virginia and DBU. Now, you could have said, you know, why couldn't this regional have been played in Fort Worth or Greenville, you know, which is closer to Charlottesville for Virginia. I think it was a good decision. Again, control what you can control to just keep this bad boy in Columbia, especially considering Virginia had to play Old Dominion on Tuesday morning, which I think was like a 9 o'clock Eastern start because of rain on Monday. So the Cavs don't have to leave. Dallas Baptist, it's easier for them to get into Columbia. But it sets up a neutral environment at a phenomenal ballpark in Founders Park. They're in Columbia, and you have a DBU team, Serbs, that, you know, no one's ever heard of, as you say, but like they have regional success. They've been to the regional in, I think, 7 straight years, 8 of the last 9 seasons. They've been to the Supers. I think this is their second appearance offhand, if I remember correctly. But Dallas Baptist is, and some of the other coaches have said this. TCU's Jim Schlossnagel, who's now the next head coach at Texas A&M, as of Wednesday morning, the day of our recording. That happened overnight, Tuesday into Wednesday. More on that in a second before we close up shop. But Jim Schlossnagel said after playing DBU in Fort Worth, like, look, that is an Omaha team. Like, they are an Omaha program. They just have never been to Omaha yet. So, you know, as much as I've loved Virginia, and I've picked them to kind of continue this run and reversing their 4-11 start, the DBU storyline is just so fascinating as a team that has just been on the cusp of getting there and has had some routine success, but is looking to break through that wall as well. So while you and I both agree USF is not going to stand a chance against Texas, you've got Dallas Baptist and you've got ECU who are both bidding for their first ever Omaha appearance. And it's just, it's kind of weird reverse poetry or psychoism, or I don't know how you want to describe it, that a team like ECU, who has been the most well-built team to make it to Omaha, that hasn't been, and has more resources, has owned their league year after year, has been so close, they draw Vanderbilt, whereas DBU has the easier path looking for their, as a Division II, they're a Division II athletic program with a Division I baseball team. And they're going to play at a neutral site in Columbia against Virginia. I just think it sets up beautifully for Dallas Baptist. That's going to be a lot of fun this weekend. I like DBU better than USF, better than ECU to earn their first ever College World Series appearance. So a neutral site, that'll be fun. And is shown over the weekend, this a lot of fun here. Steven Schock, who Virginia reliever, This is a guy I've been kind of passively tracking all year. He's got kind of that Kenny Powers vibe and look to him. You know, he's a psycho on the mound. And in his save against South Carolina to clinch Virginia's first regional championship game appearance since 2015, this is Steven Schock in his postgame interview with the ACC Network, proving to all that he is my spirit animal.
Well, emotions are go in, win. I heard a fan offer free Dippin' Dots if I blew it, which the price of Dippin' Dots with inflation is just unreal. So for a brief moment, I was like, damn, Dippin' Dots sound good. But also, I thought in the back of my head, we win today, we win tomorrow, or tonight. We're going to be here another day. That's more per diem. So that means I can buy my own Dippin' Dots and be a winner. So it's like, you know, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to attack. I think three words every time I'm out there. The first one's a swear word, starts with F. Second word's attack. Third one's win. And I just repeat that to myself. Unless, you know, there's a breach in the system and I walk a guy and I got to tell myself I'm a few different things. That isn't a winner. I might break that, but then I get right back on it. Just this attack win, you know?
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah, it's phenomenal.
He had to clarify on Twitter, too, in reposting something in the last day that, look, I've gotten a lot of questions, but I am not in my 40s. I am, you know, 24 years old or whatever it may be, 22 years old. Apparently, you know, the Cougars are just flooding his inbox. So that's great, man. Good for him. And, you know, for him to be able to leverage, you know, another day in the postseason to earn extra per diem to buy his own Dippin' Dots, like, that's awesome. And Dippin' Dots is already, their official account is already pandering towards Steven Schock, saying, you know, that they'd be willing to kick in some Dippin' Dots for him. But of course, you know, I don't know if the NIL is yet established or installed for him to get away with that. That would be an extra impermissible benefit. So he even went on to say at one point, quote, you walk into a stadium, 8,000 people, they all want you to lose. As long as you've got your 26 guys ready to kick ass, and he stopped himself. He's like, kick butt, you're going to be all right. And he's like, sorry, I sweared. With a smile. He's like, I like to swear. And you heard him, you know, the F word is his favorite word. So, I mean, this dude is just all natural. He's awesome, man.
Yeah, no, and he got it done. It's one thing to, like, be this kind of character and lose.
Yeah.
But he backs it up. And
he backs it up, and he chucked, when he got that save, like, he chucked his glove. This was on Sunday. He chucked his glove across the diamond and was, like, raising his hands up towards the sky and just going nuts, like, absolute psychopath.
Yeah, he's a fun guy, I'm sure, to have on the team. Good for the dugout, good for the pin. I mean, yeah, I love college sports because of things like that, when those personalities come out. Not everyone has an agent and a publicist, and you know what I mean? And so you get to see some real personality from some of these cats every once in a while, and that's awesome.
And, like, real talk, like, just a, you know, some side commentary, like, this, my trip, you know, here in Chicago and being out, you know, on my 16-person golf trip this past weekend in Indiana, you know, talking about college baseball and having it on the TV and trying to bring these guys up to speed with what's going on. Like, people don't really care about college baseball in the Midwest, and certainly where I come from, in Chicago, like, it's not a thing. And it's more of a thing in North Carolina and on the East Coast, because now you're into the South, and it is a way of life in the Deep South, in SEC country, like, we know that, and in varying degrees, you know, throughout Texas and other parts of the West Coast. But, like, yes, the Deep South is where it is the most popular. Mm-hmm. And then the further north you go, the less and less it becomes a thing. So I'm trying to convince and tell people and bring them up to speed on all the positives of the game and just how much more exciting and how college baseball offers up all of these things that you can't get in Major League Baseball. And that's the energy. That's the enthusiasm. That's these tournament settings throughout a weekend, and these boisterous personalities. And just seeing, you know, the real, genuine, all-natural love of the game, you know, from these guys, and you know, their blood, sweat, and tears to go along with it all. Like, you don't get that at the professional level. And there's something with and that's why you and I think Serbs love doing what we do, working in college sports, because you get that across the board in college football and college basketball. But like, college baseball just hits different in the way these guys react and respond on the field. And whether it's the dog piles to rushing out of the dugouts to, you know, the walk-off home run. How about the grand slam from DBU, from Dallas Baptist, over the weekend that put them ahead of Oregon State when they were down 5-0. And then in the seventh inning, Andrew Benfield, a former Louisville guy, hits a grand slam, and he's jumping for joy in the box, admiring his shot, knowing that he just put DBU ahead 6-5 after being down 5-0 in the elimination game for the regional championship. And the umpire, the idiot umpire, runs at him and yells at him to start running around the bases. But it's like that moment, you know, that is a moment that Benfield owned and he will never forget. And just seeing the way his team reacts and rallies around him and, you know, the team coming together, the energy, the enthusiasm, the passion, all of that. Like, you don't get that in professional sports at all.
Well, and to piggyback kind of what you were saying with college baseball in general, it is one of the college sports that truly still has an amateur feel to it. College football and college basketball are such a big business now that it's at times, with the exception of women's basketball, which unfortunately is still not getting the type of resources it needs. With those two sports, it very much feels like a semi-professional league atmosphere, right? Like, everyone seems like they're poised to go on to the NFL or the NBA. There's something about, you know, college baseball, college softball. I will throw like gymnastics and track and field into the mix as well. And women's college basketball. There's still this amateur feel about it because it's not, there isn't as much money wrapped up in it, right? Like, I don't really have a question of like, well, for this guy to come to Ole Miss, was there a bag man? You know, like, there's something so much more innocent about the sport of college baseball. And I think that's something that comes out in moments like these, you know. And we see a little bit of it in March Madness. It's phenomenal. And I think one of the reasons we see that so much in March Madness is because we start to get, you know, teams that are kind of on the outskirts of the national eye, you know, the national focus. And so we get introduced to these guys that maybe we haven't already put in our head as, like, these professional stars, even though they're college athletes. You know, that's something special, I think, about college baseball. It just still, it has an amateur feel to it that some of the big boy college sports don't have. And I think that's just some of the charm of college baseball, women's college basketball, college softball, so on and so forth.
You're right, and I think the scholarship limitations, the 11.7, does something. You know, everybody is just more on an equal playing field amongst the peers. Like, there's no big money blue chipper or potential, you know, big money, you know, scholarship player. It's more balanced, and I think the brotherhood is just a little bit different. You know, same thing can be said for softball, the sisterhood and the Women's College World Series currently going on. It's just the innocence, I think, is the right word that you used. Okay, let's pick these supers real quick, and then I want to touch on the coaching carousel. I'll run through, you know, some of the changes. But Fayetteville, NC State, good on you for winning Ruston. I expected you to do so, especially after seeing you and the way you've performed down the stretch heading into the ACC tournament in Charlotte. But I don't know. I can't see you getting past I'm already penciling in Arkansas for the national championship series, best out of three in Omaha. So that would be a shocker of all shot. We almost saw it with Nebraska, but I can't see Arkansas not getting out against NC State. I just think too much firepower offensively. And then, of course, they have Kevin Copps, which NC State does not have. So I do like Arkansas. I'm going to go a little bit against the grain here. I'm going to pick a West Coast rep in Stanford, taking down Texas Tech. I just think Texas Tech has shown too many flaws throughout the year. Now, they won, you know, over Army, UNC, and UCLA in the Lubbock Regional over the weekend, but and we know how good Tim Tadlock has been in getting this team to Omaha, but I think it's a surprise to this point that they are a super regional team, considering they finished third during the regular season in the Big 12, weren't interested in the Big 12 tournament. And I think the trees, I think Stanford is do some success here against Texas Tech. Arizona and Ole Miss, I'm going to go with Tim Elko, Mike Bianco and company, the Rebels over the Wildcats, which is going to set up with Vanderbilt over ECU, no question. Sorry, not even a thought for you Pirates fans, so you know, get at me. But Vandy, Ole Miss, and Arkansas, three of the four on that side of the bracket representing the SEC, Stanford the other one to join. And then on the other half, Texas over USF, Notre Dame, baby, homer pick over Mississippi State. Let's see those Golden Dome helmets shine at Duty Noble. And then, God, this is tough. Virginia DBU, as I said, I've been high on Virginia all year. I got to stick, as much as I want to see Dallas Baptist earn that first ever bid to Omaha, I got to continue to ride the hand that has been hot and that has done well over the last couple of months. And I've been on that Virginia Cavaliers train. I'm going to continue to ride it, although I wouldn't be mad if they end up falling to Dallas Baptist. I will take UVA. Stephen Schock, too, the Dippin' Dots quote. What a soundbite. So we're going with Virginia. And then Paul Maneri, baby. Let's go. Get back to Omaha over Tennessee. Swan Song will be almost entirely complete, but he'll get back to Omaha. So LSU, Virginia, Notre Dame, and Texas. No SEC representative with Mississippi State going down on the right side. So or LSU being the only other. So I got LSU, Virginia, Notre Dame, Texas, Arkansas, Stanford, Ole Miss, and Vanderbilt as my eight teams I'm picking to go to Omaha.
I like it. I'll just I don't know that I'll follow the bracket the same way you did, but I'll say I agree on Vandy taking down ECU. While as a North Carolina kid, I'm pulling for the Pirates. Got several friends that went there. I just think it's going to be tough, and that journey is going to continue for them to try and get to Omaha next season. And maybe next season will be the year. But I just think, you know, yeah, it's unfortunate that they're having to go to Nashville and take on one of the best teams in the country when perhaps they should be in the position that Vandy is. But regardless, I'm with you on Virginia. I think part of the thing that'll help there is just the staying in Columbia, you know, not having to move around quite as much. I know it's a truly neutral site, but Dallas Baptist is still having to travel up from Texas. Virginia was in Columbia last weekend. So Notre Dame, Mississippi State, I have to disagree with you, unfortunately. While I appreciate your Irish, I do think they caught the shaft throughout this process. The dude's going to be rocking for the Bulldogs. Texas Tech, Stanford, I think Stanford does have a good shot at this one. I'm going to go with your pick as well. They were right there in the thick of it all season long in the Pac-12, so... yeah, I like their chances against Texas Tech, who really just doesn't stick out to me. There's nothing that jumps off the page about the Red Raiders that makes me want to pick them. Arkansas, I'm going to go with as well. You know, NC State's had a great year, but you're right. You know, they got to go through Cops, and I don't know that anyone's going to be able to do that until we get into the, you know, final of the College World Series. The Maneri show continues. I agree. I think much like Mike Martin making it to to Omaha in his final season, LSU will as well. Tennessee, a great run for them, though. This is one of the best seasons they've had in quite a while. So nothing, you know, even if LSU does take them out, this is something that they can hang their hats on as being, you know, a really great year in the history of the program. South Florida, Texas, we've already talked about that. Longhorns roll. And then Arizona, Ole Miss, who knows? It's gonna be crazy. That's a toss-up. I haven't seen Arizona play at all this year, so I'm going to go with Ole Miss by default. Just because they're the SEC, it just means more, and I'm gonna hang my hat on them to round out the field.
I can't believe you're going against my Irish, man. Come on, I wouldn't go against Clemson if they were here. I got to support my boy.
It's not personal. It's not personal. But the dude's going to be rocking, and I think, you know, a three-game super regional, we'll be paying attention on they play on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, correct? Yeah, I think we'll be seeing a game on Monday in Starkville between those two. So,
just the uniforms, just the environment. I mean, those two teams, that is going to be, gosh, like, I'm going to be salivating. I'm going to be excited over that one, visually for sure. I can't really tell you exactly what's in my head right now thinking about it, but, you know, whatever. I think you can use your imagination.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so good stuff. Okay, let's see. Anything else to cover on the field? I don't think so. Let me touch on some coaching carousel stuff. Then we'll get out. You can react to any one of these four things. And Jim Schlossnagel officially going to Texas A&M. That happening here Wednesday morning. Three Big 12 regular season titles at TCU. 15 NCAA tournament appearances. 7 super regional appearances. And 5 College World Series appearances. including four straight from 14 to 17. Remember, Texas A&M has only been to the College World Series six times in their entire program history. So Ross York is looking to ante up and make Texas A&M, you know, really a true power, like they are in a sense, but they don't have the postseason success. So Childers out after 13 straight NCAA tournament appearances came to an end. His contract was not renewed after not making the SEC tournament either. So, and Schlossnagel, 55-36 career showing in the NCAA tournament. So, he spurns the Frogs. He's going to stay in state and go to Texas A&M. Schlossnagel, now a member of the SEC. The rich get richer, right? In terms of the SEC and that conference, just goes to show you, you know, it just means more. So, Ray Anderson. This is very curious. He's the athletic director at Arizona State. So he's not going to have back head coach Tracy Smith after seven seasons. Tracy Smith has been fired by Ray Anderson. 33-22 overall record this year. Didn't make it out of the Austin Regional. 16-14 in Pac-12 play. Smith was 201-155, 87-92 in Pac-12 play. Reached the NCAA tournament in four of seven seasons. So Ray Anderson, Serber, says that this team should be able to compete amongst or finish amongst the top three of the Pac-12. And they should, you know, look to get back to Omaha every single year. That should be a goal, which, yeah, obviously it goes without saying. You've been there 22 times. You've won five national championships, but you haven't been in 10, 11 years or so. So, like, Ray Anderson serves is saying that, you know, this program, this should be a hallmark job and, you know, a cornerstone program of college baseball. Yet, he does say, we're not going to get in a bidding war with other teams. We have limitations. There are athletic departments who have more money because they're sponsoring 18 or 19 varsity programs, and we're sponsoring 26. So what he says is they're not willing to pay. He says, quote, they're going to lavish. Places like the SEC are going to lavish coaches with compensation. We don't have that luxury at a place like Arizona State or in the Pac-12. We have some other goals in mind. Continuing a quote here, this is from D1 Baseball, Kendall Rogers' piece. There are going to be folks that we predetermine aren't going to be in our pool of candidates, so we won't waste our time in a lot of those situations. So you want to make Arizona State a legitimate contender, but you're not willing to pay that person to come in, basically, is what Ray Anderson is saying. So I don't know how things are ever going to change at Arizona State if that's the case.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting take, too, because aren't they paying Herm a ton of money to coach the football team? I believe he's got to be one of the highest-paid head coaches in college football. Okay. You know, that's coach speak for an AD, I suppose. Yeah.
So Arizona State comes open. Also, Cal State Fullerton, Rick Vanderhoek, friend of the program, had him on the show a year ago. Titans finished 20-35, 13-23 in the Big West this year. Things have really fallen off the rails since 2018. Fullerton went 32-23, making it into the tournament. Seven straight NCAA tournaments under Vanderhoek, but it was ugly. 27-26 in 19, missed the tournament. 4-12 start during the COVID year. So Vanderhoek is out after 10 years at Cal State Fullerton. So, and they've got four national titles and 12 appearances in Omaha. I think it's 12 or 18. Them and Arizona State combined for 40. So and yeah. nine national titles. So I mean, those are two tradition rich programs for sure. And I mean, you can't really look far outside the Cal State Fullerton circle to bring anybody into there because, I mean, you aren't showing the same worth, trust, and promise in baseball as you once had if you're Cal State Fullerton. And what I mean is you've got UC Santa Barbara, UC Irvine, you've even got Long Beach State, who I think are showing more value and more interest in making themselves legitimate when it comes to resources and everything else with that. They're more all in with baseball at this time than Cal State Fullerton. So, which is sad to an extent. And then LSU, here's the real interesting one. Serbs, I mean, pulmonary, LSU, they're still in it. They're still playing. They're going to Knoxville this weekend. Kevin O'Sullivan and Florida are not. And yeah. Sully, you win a national title in 17 over LSU. Your team is disinterested as hell this weekend in your own regional in Gainesville. And you look at Florida Athletics and Florida baseball, you got a brand new stadium and full capacity is allowed, but nobody shows up. The culture is just different. You have an opportunity to maybe leave Florida and go to LSU, where the culture is night and day to what you experience at Florida, where fans actually care. And you can go somewhere where you have every single resource, including the fan support. If you're Kevin O'Sullivan, I don't see why you wouldn't entertain at least an offer from LSU at this point. There's no doubt he's the top candidate for LSU at this point. So what do you think? Do you think Sully should consider, and do you think he will bolt Florida for LSU if the opportunity comes up?
Yeah, you got to go where the money is in this business, I think, a lot of times, but it seems a bit like a lateral move to me. So
he can get paid $2 mil.
I mean, like, if you can get paid, it's, and I hate the narrative of, like, these, you know, people who like to bash these guys for going where the money is, but it's like, hey, not like you wouldn't do that and your, you know, whatever your chosen career path is too. That'll be interesting to see if that plays out, but the LSU job is a good job regardless of who takes. Like, if he takes it, I don't think there's going to be anybody, like, really questioning him except for Florida fans. And then on the Cal State Fullerton front, you know, Vanderhook, 7 straight NCAA tournament appearances up until, what, the year before last. So, you know, Cal State Fullerton, like you said, they still have a chance to kind of be, you know, one of those local teams out there, not in the Pac-12 that makes a run every year. But you're right, that it's getting tougher and tougher in the Big West.
Yeah, and Cal State Fullerton, 18 College World Series appearances. Arizona State, 22. 4 natties for Cal State Fullerton, 5 for Arizona State. But, Florida and Kevin O'Sullivan, you wonder what that situation is like behind closed doors and if he really is considering a move, which would seem lateral in a way, especially because you have a national title more recently than LSU has, and you beat LSU to do so in 2017. But, man, for a team that was preseason number one in Florida and to go out the way they went out, just inconsistent all year long, you still get a regional. And then you get pounded the way you did, especially in your exit game, 19-1. You just wonder, you know, what more might be going on behind the scenes. Lance Berkman, by the way, was hired at Houston Baptist, too. So he does get his coaching opportunity. So a guy that was, you know, rumored or wanted to by many to be looked at by Rice. Rice still hasn't filled that spot either also. But Berkman lands at Houston Baptist. Hat tip on the way out. Women's College World Series. Florida State leading Oklahoma State in the championship series 1-0. Here as we enter Wednesday evening's game 2, a chance to close it out. 10-seeded Seminoles winning 8-4 on Tuesday night. And also Montana Fouts for Alabama. 5th pitcher to throw a perfect game in Women's College World Series history over the weekend. 14 strikeouts in that performance against UCLA. First time there had been a perfect game in the WCWS since 2000. So he's Michael Serber on Twitter at @L_Serberino. I'm Kyle Schatzberger at Kyle Schatz. Serbs, wish me well in my pizza eating escapades and hot dogs and Italian beef and all of that and the like. And hopefully I look to see you maybe next week, perhaps. I know you're heading to the beach, but we'll have the Super Regionals to unpack and then Omaha to prepare for.
Yeah, man. Get that deep dish on, brother.
Dude, I'm going to get it on so good. I'm going to eat an entire pie, and I'm going to come back 15 pounds heavier when you see me next. You watch. He's Michael Serber. He's Michael Serber. I'm Kyle Schatzberger. I'm going to get to work here. Chi-Town, here we come, okay? Bye.